This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
It's been a while since Bob Costas has joined us here on Sports Byline, but I always like connecting with Bob because he makes so much sense when it comes to talking about the landscape of sport. He needs no introduction, but I think you know he hosts a number of shows, including HBO's Inside the NFL, and he also wrote the book back in 2000, Fair Ball, A Fan's Case for Baseball. Bob, it's been a while since we've talked to you. Let's first of all talk about your Olympic experience. What was it like?
Well, I really have to tip my cap to everyone involved with the Olympic Organizing Committee in Athens. Logistical problems were predicted. There was some justification for those predictions, but virtually none of them turned out. It was a perfectly handled Olympics. The security was world-class, and God knows they faced all kinds of potential threats. They handled it well. They got the venues built in time. It was last minute, but the venues were first rate, and they put on an excellent Olympic Games.
Bob, when you take a look at the Olympics today and think back about the Olympics that you have covered in the past, the feel of the Olympics today, and also is it an antiquated format for world-class competition, meaning the trouble that they've had with the drugs and performance-enhancing drugs and just the whole atmosphere, the cost of doing Athens as well? I mean, are we talking about an antiquated system here?
Well, there's multiple questions there. Let's take the last part. I don't think you will ever see a country the size of Greece or a city the size of Athens play host to an Olympics again. And it wouldn't have happened in 2004 but for the historic connection of Greece to the Olympics. That's the only thing that pulled it off for them. And even so, they operated at a huge deficit. The only way that smaller cities and nations could ever handle an Olympics again is if they internationalized the cost. So let's say the host city and country pays a certain percentage, and then the rest of the IOC, in proportion to the size of each member's purse, they contribute another portion of the cost of organizing and planning for the games. Another possibility would be if they considered semi-permanent Olympic sites. If Athens, for example, knew that every fifth summer games would be staged in Athens, every 20 years or so you'd have one in Athens, and the justification would be that this is the historic home of the Olympics, then they could amortize the cost over time. But unless something like those things or some combination of those things happens, it's always going to be the mega cities in the future. It's going to be Paris. It's going to be New York, London, something like that. In terms of the competition itself, the highest profile events, especially track and field, are no doubt compromised by performance-enhancing drugs. The Olympic officials are sincere and very ambitious in their desire to wipe it out, but as you know, the cheaters tend to stay one step ahead of the drug police with ever more sophisticated methods. So we have to look with some skepticism upon some of those results. At the same time, most of what goes on at an Olympic Games isn't what you see on primetime television. It's a volleyball match that doesn't even have medal implications. It's a taekwondo match between competitors from small countries. And these people represent the best of the best of their nation, and it really means something to them to come to this great international stage. So in that sense, I think that the Olympics are still valid.
What about the value of the Olympics today? I mean, do you see value in it still, Bob?
Well, there's potential financial value. For some host cities, it works out very well. For others, less well. And certainly there are moments that highlight what the Olympics are all about, but you have to look at it with a grain of salt, no doubt about it. I mean, the 100% idealism will never be there. It's compromised by politics, by hypocrisy, by commercialism, by hype. And then just when you're about to say, you know what, on balance, this is kind of tilting toward the negative, something amazing or heartwarming or redeeming will happen, and it brings you back for more.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you the question about what was your favorite out of the Athens Olympics. What was your favorite both broadcast story and also performance story?
I loved it when they went back to the ancient Olympic site at Olympia and staged the shot put there. And I loved their opening ceremony. It was a shame that Kostas Kanteras, their reigning 200-meter Olympic champion, couldn't light the torch because he'd screwed himself up and embarrassed his country by being involved in a doping scandal. That would have been perfect if he had been able to be the symbolic lighter of the torch. But other than that, I thought they did a great job paying homage to the history of the Olympic Games and the history of their country, which is one of the richest in all the world in terms of its history and connection to sports. So the things that had a kind of an historic tie-in were my favorites.
And also, people don't realize the logistical nightmare that it is. Can you give us some insight and let everybody know just what it takes to put on something like this from a broadcast standpoint?
I'm not even sure I understand all of it, because there are people, even as we speak, that are working on putting on the Torino Winter Olympic Games in February of 2006 and the Beijing Summer Games in 2008. It's like massing an army to do these things. People involved at every level, thousands and thousands of people. And as we've talked about before, the preparation for each of the broadcasters is very extensive, because in many cases, not all, but in many cases, you're talking about sports that we don't cover on a day-to-day basis and aren't as inherently familiar with as we would be, you know, the big sports that we cover day in, day out in the United States, baseball, football, basketball, whatever. So it's a big undertaking.
I think you know as well as I do that they may talk about the performance-enhancing drugs and scandals in the competition, but the Olympics have had their own scandals even at the higher levels with the awarding of the Olympic Games. Have they cleaned that up? Do you feel that there is no more question about the credibility of the awarding of these Olympic Games any longer?
I don't know that you can ever say there would never be any question, but I think they have addressed the questions substantially. Obviously, they put in greater transparency. They put in various checks and balances that didn't exist before. They were very embarrassed by the Salt Lake bid scandal, and they're determined that nothing like that will happen again. With all due respect to Juan Antonio Samaranch, the previous head of the IOC, he ran a much different sort of Olympic committee, and there was a lot of old world and old way of doing things in his approach. And I think Jacques Roga, the new president, is a more forward-looking man with a greater understanding of the world outside old Europe than Samaranch had. And while that doesn't guarantee there won't be future scandals, I think it lessens the possibility.
Certainly there is one person that is strongly connected to the Olympic Games, and he has had to recently deal with a crisis and a challenge in his life, and I'm talking about Dick Ebersol, with NBC. I know you've worked closely with him, and he has been a force when it comes to covering sports. Your thoughts on him as far as being that force?
Well, he learned at the knee, almost literally, of Rune Arledge, and has tried to carry it forward in the modern era. The difference is, though, are significant, because at the time that Rune Arledge, in combination with Jim McKay and all the other talented people at ABC, made the modern television Olympics what they were, it was basically a 4 or 5 station universe. There was no internet, there was no ESPN, people didn't have VCRs. They were impressed by the mere idea that they were getting a live picture from Munich or Mexico City. And so even though it seemed like they might have been jumping from one event to another, the whole metabolism of the culture was different. You could stick with things longer. You could let a story play itself out over a longer period of time. Jim McKay might sit there and just muse about something for a couple of minutes until it was time to throw it to the next thing. Now, as a nod toward what the realities of television are in 2004, people sitting there with a remote control, knowing they can get the results off the internet, having all the highlight shows, I think that we've had to make a concession to a generally shorter attention span. There's so much money involved in the rights fees now. It dwarfs whatever ABC had to pay. The stakes are so high that television is less willing to risk having the rating dip for even 5 or 10 minutes to take a more journalistic look at a story or to do something that goes off the beaten path. They're always playing the surest card in the deck in terms of spiking the ratings, whether it's the gymnastics or the track and field or whatever it might be. So that makes it inevitably a different kind of coverage. If Jim McKay were 45 or 50 years old today, and if Rune Arledge was at the peak of his powers, they couldn't do it exactly the same way as they did it in 1968 or 1972. Would they still do it extremely well? Of course they would, but they'd be operating in a somewhat different universe. One thing I think that worked well for NBC this time around was that by using all the different cable platforms, CNBC, MSNBC, Bravo, Telemundo, USA, they were able to show some of the so-called minor sports that generally don't make it in primetime. If you had an interest in any of those sports, you could find them somewhere on the broadcast band. So if you were enterprising enough to skip around, I think you got everything you wanted from the Olympic buffet. But if you were just in prime time, then it's always going to be a certain center cut of events presented a certain way because that's what the commercial reality dictates.
Bob Costas has joined us on Sports Byline. We've been talking about the Olympics, of course, of which he hosted the main coverage for NBC. Bob also wrote the book, Fair Ball, A Fan's Case for Baseball, in 2000. And we're going to be talking about the landscape of baseball, but also the landscape of sports overall. And we do that as we continue across the country and around the world on the American Forces Network, the Internet, Sirius Satellite Radio, and ATA Airlines. We've got you on Sports Byline.